Welcome to The Word for Today, featuring the Bible teaching of Pastor Chuck Smith, founder of the Calvary Chapel Movement. This radio program is a verse-by-verse study through the entire Bible.
And on today's edition of The Word for Today, Pastor Chuck continues with the attitude in your heart as we pick up in Matthew chapter 5, verse 21. And now with today's message, here's Pastor Chuck.
Jesus gives here five of the teachings of the scribes and Pharisees concerning the law, as they were interpreting it and as they were teaching it to the people. And Jesus shows, first of all, how they were teaching it, and then he declares what was intended when God gave it. And the basic difference between the way they were teaching it and the way God intended it to be was that they were teaching it as purely a physical thing to be fulfilled in a physical way, and Jesus is declaring that God intended it to be a spiritual thing governing the spiritual attitudes of man. And that God is more interested in your attitudes than he is the actions. Now, there are many people today who are trying to be so careful in their actions, but their attitudes stink. And God is interested in the attitude from which actions spring. And thus, what a person does can be thoroughly disallowed by the attitude in which he's doing it. A person can be doing all kinds of magnanimous works for God in the church, just busying himself and doing so many marvelous things around the church, but his attitude can be bad, and God totally disregards the things that the man is doing because of the attitude in which he is doing it. God is far more interested in the attitude in your heart than the actions of your outward life. And they had been interpreting the law to govern the actions of man, where God intended the law to be speaking to the attitudes of man. Thus, in the way that they were interpreting the law, they were able to fulfill it. But in the way that the law was originally intended, because it was intended to govern the spirit of man, the law was actually intended to make the whole world guilty before God and to show man's guilt. But rather than their reading the law and feeling guilty before God, seeking the mercy and the grace of God, they were so interpreting the law as having fulfilled the law and thus being very pompous and very righteous and very critical of everybody else. And they were interpreting the law so that they were having this tremendous attitude of self-righteousness and pride, looking down then upon everybody else. And it was manifested, as Jesus said, when the Pharisee went into the temple and said, "Oh, Father, I thank you, I'm not like other men, for I fast and I pray." And, you know, and he's telling God all of his good things. And Jesus said there was a sinner that went into the temple, and he wouldn't even lift his eyes toward heaven, but with head bowed, he just smote on his chest and, "Oh, God, be merciful to me, a sinner." And Jesus said, he went away justified or forgiven. Where the first guy, you know, his prayers meant nothing to God. Now, that's because they were interpreting the law in a wrong way, only to govern the outward actions of man and not to deal with the spirit at all. And as you see Jesus making the contrast, he first of all shows how they were teaching it, but then he shows the original intent of the law. And thus, as we see the original intent of the law, we are all made guilty before God. First of all, you have heard that it was said by those in the old times that thou shalt not kill. Actually, literally, thou shalt not murder. And whosoever shall murder shall be in danger of the judgment. Now, doesn't the law say that? Yes. It does. Thou shalt not murder. That is the law. Then why does Jesus have any controversy with that? You know what God intended when he said that? You know what constitutes the violation of thou shalt not murder? Not just taking a club and beating the guy over the head until he's senseless. Not just putting a chokehold on until he can't breathe anymore. Not running your sword through his heart. But Jesus said, I say unto you, this is what they've been teaching you, but this is what I say. This is what the law was intended to say. That whosoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment. You see, it is this ungoverned and unreasonable anger that leads to murder. Now, you may have an ungovernable, unreasonable anger, but you may have been able to control it. But you go around constantly seething, constantly angry, boiling inside. Jesus said, hey, you violated that law already in your heart, in your spirit. But because you've never taken a .45 and blown a guy's brains out, you go, well, man, I've never murdered. No, I feel pretty righteous, you know. And yet all of this horrible anger can be boiling inside of you. Whosoever shall say to his brother, Raca, that is, you vain fellow, shall be in danger of the council. But whosoever shall say, thou fool, shall be in danger of hellfire. Therefore, if when you are bringing your gift to the altar and you suddenly remember that your brother has aught against you, leave there thy gift before the altar and go thy way. First be reconciled to thy brother and then come and offer thy gift. Now, in geometry, I learned that the shortest distance between two points was a straight line, and that may be true in geometry, but not necessarily true in your getting to God. Quite often in our approach of God, bringing to the altar our gift, the most direct approach to God is not a straight line, but it is by an offended brother. Go first, be reconciled to your brother, then come and offer your gift. Now he said, agree with your adversary readily, quickly, while you are in the way with him. Lest at any time your adversary deliver you to the judge, and the judge deliver you to the officer, and you'll be cast into prison. Verily, I say unto you, you will not come out until you have paid the uttermost farthing. Of course, he's referring there to the debtor's prison and all. So get along with people. Love people. Now, you've heard that it was said by them of old time, thou shalt not commit adultery. But I say unto you, that whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery with her already in his heart. Now, the first part, a lot of you can just, you know, square back with self-righteousness and say, well, I've never committed adultery. But when Jesus interprets it, as God intended, but I say unto you, whosoever looks upon a woman to lust after her heart, then suddenly the chest is sucked in, and we think, wow, that desire constitutes guilt in the eyes of the Lord. And you see the difference, where the way Jesus was interpreting it, it made us all guilty before God. The way they were interpreting it, it made them very pompous and self-righteous. But the way Jesus was interpreting it, it makes us all guilty. And that's exactly what the law was intended to do, to make the whole world guilty before God, so that we would not seek to come before God in our own righteousness, but that we would seek that righteousness that God has provided for us, that we might have that standing before God in the righteousness of Jesus Christ. So the law was a schoolmaster to drive us to Jesus Christ. Now Jesus said, if thy right eye offend thee, pluck it out and cast it from thee. For it is profitable for thee that one of your members should perish rather than that your whole body should be cast into hell. And if your right hand offends you, cut it off, cast it from you. For it is profitable for thee that one of your members should perish and not that your whole body should be cast into hell. Now, let me say that interpreting the Sermon on the Mount or the words of Jesus Christ, that we must take care in interpreting. Because if our interpretation of a passage makes the passage ridiculous, then we have the wrong interpretation. And in noticing this, if your right eye offends thee, pluck it out and cast. He's not speaking literally of just plucking out your eye and throwing it away because through that eye you looked at a gal and you thought, whee, you know, that'd be nice. Because even if you plucked out your right eye and cast it from you, you still got your left eye. If you're a thief, pickpocket, use your right hand. It offends you. Cut it off. If that were literal, you'd develop the skill with the left hand. So he's not talking literally of plucking out your eye or cutting off your hand. But he is just trying to show to you, because to every one of us, the thought of plucking out our right eye is a very repugnant, repulsive. Oh, you know, I shudder at that. Ooh, you know, that gives me the chills, thinking of plucking out my right eye. Or taking and running my hand through a bandsaw. Ooh, you know, that gives me the chills, thinking of, you know, my hand lying there on the table of the saw. Picking it up and stuffing it in my pocket, you know. And it's repugnant to me. The thought is repugnant. But Jesus, by this, deliberately speaking of things that are so repugnant to us, is just seeking to show the importance of entering the kingdom of heaven. And in reality, the most important thing for any of us, more important than a whole body, more important than having all the members of my body intact, is that I enter into the kingdom of heaven. And I need to have that kind of a primary emphasis in my life. The kingdom of heaven is the greatest goal, the greatest desire, and thus should bring into my life the greatest sacrifices. And I should not be concerned with what sacrifice I may make in a temporal way, because I'm seeking the eternal kingdom of heaven. Now, the third illustration, he said, it hath been said that whosoever shall put away his wife, let him give her a writing of divorcement. But I say unto you, that whosoever shall put away his wife, except it be for the cause of fornication, causes her to commit adultery. And whosoever shall marry her that is divorced commits adultery. Now, the issue of Jesus and divorce is a very interesting issue, and it is one that is very relevant for today because of the high incidence of divorce. And under the law, it said, if a man be married to a wife, and he finds an uncleanness in her, let him give her a writing of divorcement. In those days, the woman really did not have many rights. If her husband wanted to divorce her, he could divorce her, but she could not divorce him. There was no provision for a wife getting a divorce from a husband. But the husband could get a divorce, and they began, as they do today, to interpret the law. You know, how that our laws have been so interpreted now by the courts that they become more liberal all the time. So that if the officer, when he arrests you, does not have a probable cause to search you, but without the probable cause, he searches you and finds in your possession a .45 and ballistics test prove that it was the gun that was used to murder that man just down the street, and you have the man's watch and wallet in your pocket and all. But the officer didn't inform you of your rights, or he didn't have probable cause of searching you. You can get off free because we've, you know, so interpreted the law. In fact, I saw the other day where they let a guy off free because he wore jail clothes when he was on trial, and it gave a presupposition of guilty. And though he was guilty, and they had all the proof to prove that he was guilty, because they did not let him wear a business suit when he stood before the jury, but he was in jail attire, they set him free. The liberalizing of the law through interpretation. Now, this law of divorce had been extremely liberalized through interpretation. What did the law constitute if he finds an uncleanness in her? And there was one school of rabbis under Hillel who interpreted that very strictly as being he found that she wasn't a virgin when he married her. But the other school of rabbis had begun to liberalize that law to the extent that if you found an uncleanness in your wife could constitute that she just didn't fix your eggs the way you liked them in the morning. And that would be an uncleanness in her. I don't like the way she cooks. Here, you're through, woman. Writing of divorcement. And they just write out the divorcement and hand it to her. And she had no alternative. I mean, he did that, she was gone. She had no recourse. She was out. That's why this custom of dowry became popular. For dowry was actually alimony in advance. It was paid to the girl's father, and he would keep it for her. In case her husband ever put her out, then she's got her alimony already set. He paid it before they got married, and dowry was really alimony in advance. Not such a bad deal. When divorce is so easy and so liberalized. So this is the background, a very easy divorce. Just give her a writing of a bill of divorcement, any excuse, you know, any uncleanness, and that could mean anything. Didn't like the way she combed her hair, didn't like the way she looked in the morning when she first woke up. And so they had so liberalized the divorce laws. And so Jesus is going back more towards the original. But we'll get more into this when we get to the 17th chapter or the 19th chapter and we look at the law of Jesus and divorce there, because Jesus does then begin to amplify it there a bit, but we'll wait till chapter 19. Again, you have heard that it hath been said by those of old time, thou shalt not forswear thyself, but shall perform unto the Lord thine oaths. But I say unto you, don't swear at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by the earth, for it is God's footstool, neither by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great King. Neither shalt thou swear by thy head, because you cannot make one hair white or black. That was before Clairol. But let your yes be a yes, let your no be a no, and whatever is more than this is deceitful. Now, Jesus is talking about that deceitfulness of being able to say no, though it sounds like yes. Or saying yes when you really don't mean yes. Basically, Jesus is saying you should be a person of your word. You should not have to take an oath. You should not have to swear to the truth that you are declaring. I swear in the Bible I'm telling you the truth, man. Well, you only have to do that if you are basically an untruthful person and nobody trusts you. But you should be a person of your word, and when you say yes, you should mean yes, and when you say no, you should mean no. Let your yes be yes and your no be no. And don't get into these long, deceitful kind of, well, I would be very happy to do it, and I'll tell you what, I'll pray about it, brother. But you're really saying, no, I really don't want to do it. I have no intention of doing it. But I don't want to tell you no, because it may offend you. But Jesus said, be a person of your word. If you say yes, mean yes. If you say no, mean no. Anything that is more than this is just deceitful to cover up the truth. Now you've heard that it hath been said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But let me explain the way they were teaching this law. First of all, this law was not given to the common people. This came under the law when God was instructing the judges concerning their judgment in the cases that were brought before them. And there should be equity meted out from the judges. And he uses the eye for an eye, tooth for tooth, to show that when you judge, make the judgment equitable.
We'll return with more of our verse-by-verse Bible study in the book of Matthew on our next broadcast, as Pastor Chuck continues to teach through the Bible. And we do hope you'll make plans to join us. But right now, if you'd like to order a copy of today's message, simply order Matthew 5 when visiting thewordfortoday.org. And while you're there, be sure to browse the many additional biblical resources by Pastor Chuck. You can also subscribe to the Word for Today podcast or sign up for our email subscription. Once again, that's thewordfortoday.org. For those of you wishing to call, our toll-free number is 1-800-272-WORD, and our office hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Again, that's 1-800-272-9673. If you prefer to write, our mailing address is The Word for Today, P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. And now, on behalf of The Word for Today, we'd like to thank all of you who share in supporting this ministry with your prayers and financial support. And be sure to join us again next time as Pastor Chuck continues his verse-by-verse study through the Bible. That's right here on the next edition of The Word for Today. And now, once again, here's Pastor Chuck.
May the Lord put His hand upon your life, fill you with His Spirit, and guide you with His counsels. May you begin to experience greater victories over those areas of the flesh that have dominated. And may you begin to experience more and more the power of God's Spirit within your life, giving victory. May the Lord be with you, and may the Lord keep you in His love. And may you just grow in your knowledge of Him and in your fellowship. In Jesus' name.
This program has been sponsored by Calvary Chapel of Costa Mesa, California.
For years, Pastor Chuck was asked thousands of questions.
This new guy that my mom married, he thinks that the Christian beliefs are foolish, and I was wondering if that's going to affect my mom's walk.
I'm a Christian. I'm trying to fight the addiction of smoking, and are those things going to keep me from going in the rapture?
Is it okay to use your tithe and give it to someone who's going on a mission trip instead of giving it directly to church?
The Word for Today is pleased to present an ebook called Biblical Counseling by Chuck Smith, listing over 200 topics that include Pastor Chuck's commentary and the scripture references he used. Topics include addiction, business relationships, depression, lawsuits, sexuality, training children, and so much more. To download the Biblical Counseling ebook by Chuck Smith, visit thewordfortoday.org and click on the link provided. Or you can call 1-800-272-9673.